is the monthly report for Aid Northwest. Aid Northwest is Advocates for Immigrants in Detention Northwest. Aid Northwest supports immigrants in detention and when released from the Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma through welcoming services focused on transitional support and connection to vital resources for resettlement.
Good day, folks. My name is Bill, and I work at the Welcome Center, and this is a report for the Advocates for Immigrants in Detention Northwest, February. First, a few highlights from the newsletter. There's a story that I'm going to read to you later, and the annual report, which is well worth reading because it tells what we did in the year of 2022. And then here's a big, exciting new one. We're going to get ESL lessons inside the detention center for the first time. Deborah's been working on this for like several years. And finally, we have something that's been improved by both our board and ICE and composed of 20 short teaching videos available to all detainees and supplemented by worksheets done with volunteer visitors and tutors. So these are going to help a great deal inside the detention center because everybody wants to learn English when they come to this country. And why not start the minute you get here? And when you're kind of locked up and have time on your hands. Okay, so that's some of the big news. I'll go ahead and read the statistics for the month of February. We had a total of 67 immigrants served, 6 deportation bags, although there's far more deportees. 40 coats were given out, 42 rides given to the airport, to the train station, to the bus station. 5 guests were at the hospitality house, 42 letters written to detainees, 133 phone funds, and each phone fund is $20, so that's a total of $2,060, and then 45 visits to detainees inside for a total of 718 volunteer hours. Just a little side note on how the Welcome Center has been going lately. The last couple of weeks have been rather slow with only 1 or 2 or 0 detainees coming out. But we're hoping that will pick up soon. And just the other day, 5 or 6 came out. But it's been slow. But anyhow, moving on to a tale of success of some detainees that we did see come out almost 2 years ago now. An Immigration Tale by Bill Lloyd. Because my neighbor Eloise and I share a common experience, we're both retired Spanish teachers, and because she is so generous and caring of others, I persuaded her to sign on as a volunteer at the Aid Northwest Welcome Center, greeting and helping immigrants released from detention. One evening, as activities were winding down and newly released immigrants were being taken to the airport, Eloise noticed a young lady sitting alone in tears with no plans as to where to go, what to do. Eloise took her under her wing. As it turned out, she had been mistakenly released with a positive COVID-19 test, though asymptomatic. While the woman went through the health department quarantine at a hotel in Centralia for 2 weeks, Eloise stayed in contact with her. The lady soon found a sponsor in Florida who arranged a flight to Miami. Arriving in Miami, she was to meet her husband's cousin, who had a job and housing lined up, but the cousin never showed up. She was told to stay in a room in a house and wait. She gave Eloise a phone call, who noticed several red flags and suspected a possible trafficking scheme. She told the lady to pack her things and take a bus to the airport and that a ticket to Seattle would be waiting for her there. Eloise and her husband provided the ticket and put her up in a spare room in their house. They soon got news that her husband was being released from detention on the southern border. They got him a ticket to Seattle, and the couple were soon happily reunited. Through a friend of a friend, they got a weekend job helping to cater a large wedding, after which the caterer, a single mom with 3 kids living in a single wide trailer, offered them a room in her house and more work opportunities. Soon, her and her husband got work permits, jobs, a car, and have moved 3 times, are taking English classes now, and are expecting their first child. When they first arrived, they both helped out at the Welcome Center occasionally as well. But now, with less work and higher expenses, the real struggle begins. They are strong, but the world is not often kind to immigrants. Pray for them. And that, I think, concludes the report for the month of February.
This is Louisa Beale with Aid Northwest, and I'm here with Betty Devereaux, who
Hello.
Has been there since before the beginning. So, Betty, tell us about the early days of what happened outside the detention center.
So I got involved because a Dominican sister friend of mine said, there's going to be a meeting at St. Leo's, come. At the time, it was called the Round Table, and they met once a month, and a lot of people very concerned about immigration and the immigrants and the detention center, and they pretty much swapped information about, you know, this social worker has a grant to help somebody do so-and-so, and so I went to a few of those, and then they started talking about going to the detention center because they found out that people were being released without proper clothes for the season and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I understand that they're just released and out into the tide flats.
Yes, the detention center is in the tide flats, which, in case nobody knows, it is a totally industrial area. Nobody lives there except the people in the detention center.
I mean, I have lived in Tacoma all my life, well, except for school. I couldn't find my way out of the tide flats.
And what was happening was these folks were just getting released and see you bye. And at the time they were getting released in the clothes they were picked up in, so if they happened to be harvesting and had their jeans and t-shirt on, but now it's February, they're coming out in jeans and a t-shirt. So we started originally going there with cars, and in the back, in the trunks of the cars, we had gloves and hats and water and that sort of thing. And then it evolved into, we lucked onto this, I don't know if luck is the word, but we did wind up with an RV. The RV was very, very old and needed a lot of help.
You worked with what you got.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It had no lights. It had no heat. It was basically a shell that you could stand in so you wouldn't get wet. And we got permission to park it right outside the where they release the people at the release gate, they call it. And so when people would come out, we would approach them and try to say hello in whatever language we thought they were. I've made a few boo-boos by talking and saying, you know, hola, como esta, to people who looked at me funny, and it turned out they were, you know, from Punjabi, India. So, you know, you learn. At the beginning, it was Tim Chen and his wife, Pat, were the people who did Monday nights, and my friend Fran and I did Tuesday nights, and somebody did Wednesday nights. And I think Thursdays was St. Leo's. And finally Fridays they got World Relief to come in and help. Totally different than what goes on now. A lot of times when we first started that, a lot of times people would not come in, would not talk to us because they thought we were part of ICE, because we were right there out of the detention center. Even though we had this claptrap, really raggedy old RV. But eventually, they let the word get around, and people would come out, and we would say, you know, we're with Aid Northwest, how can we help you? And they would go, oh, yeah, we heard about you. Oh, yeah, thank you. So so the word was getting around, and there were, Pat and Tim and Fran and I worked every week, Mondays, and we did Tuesdays, and we did that for several years. I can't even remember how long it's been. It was quite an experience because we were just by the seat of our pants mostly. I mean, it was like, this guy needs a train ticket. Okay, what do we do to get somebody a train ticket? I mean, it was just kind of whatever they thought they would like to have, you know. We tried to supply for them. We would keep snacks and sodas, and Coca-Colas were very big. Everybody wanted to have a Coca-Cola. Yeah, we met people from all over the world, and all of them, just so much like you and I, just wanted a chance to do better in the world, wanted a chance to get their kids out of a really bad situation, to get their family out of a really bad situation. I remember when I first started there, people would say to me, aren't you afraid to go there? And I'd say, well, what's to be afraid of? on that. Well, these people, people are people just like me and you.
Yeah.
They just happen to have gotten caught up in this Byzantine system and wound up in a detention center.
But again, they committed no crime.
Right, exactly. And that's really hard for people to understand that, walking across the border and saying, I'd like help, I want asylum, is not a crime. So, it was a big education. I mean, that, you know, and then eventually we started into not just trying to raise money to help these people, but we started a speakers bureau, and I was part of that speakers bureau.
Oh, nice.
And at the time, there was a group, this was all pre-COVID, this was years before pre-COVID, and there was a group, and I'm trying to think of their name, I think they were called Tacoma for Justice, I can't remember exactly, but it was lawyers who were lawyers for the detainees, and they wanted to show what was going on inside the detention center, and we hooked up with them. And they did so many plays for us. They took the transcripts from actual hearings of detainees, and one of them pretended they were the judge, and one of them pretended they were the advocate for the person. One of them pretended they were the prosecution, and they just basically said the things that were in these exact transcripts, and they got people from the audience to be the person. And so they would say to him, okay, all you have to do is say, no understand. And, you know, so there were very small parts, but it got across things like language barriers. It got across things like, my aunt lives 20 miles from here. Can I go see her? No. Just the whole Byzantine series. I believe all of the people they ever read the transcripts of. And, you know, they were dressed in judges' robes. And, I mean, they would do this in sanctuaries and churches and places like that. And they helped us raise a lot of money, raise a lot of awareness about what's actually going on. And, gosh, I was the MC, I guess you would say, for about 5 or 6 of those. And they did them in a lot of places for a lot of people. They were just an absolute godsend to see. This is what's really going on here. And then, of course, afterwards, they would have a question and answer, and people would say, well, you know, they're criminals, right? They're going to wait, you know, and then they would explain. So then we would go off on our own, so to speak, too, and speak at churches, or I spoke at the Gig Harbor Chamber of Commerce once. So, you know, wherever I spoke at a live-in for adult seniors place. So, and it was always kind of hit or miss who would understand what I was saying and who would be sympathetic as opposed to people who would, several times a couple of people walked out of things I was talking about. And you try not to be political about this. This is not a political issue. This is a human rights issue. You know, and you try to say, I've met these people. I know who they are. You know, you change in yourself when you do this kind of work. Because you go with a heart full of help, and you wind up with a heart full of gratitude that what you are doing, A, is helpful to them, and B, that they are so grateful that somebody took the time to talk to a person, a total stranger in the whole wide world, maybe not even in the same language. I mean, there were many, many nights where my no bueno Spanish was, but there was some interaction, some love in that too, where they knew a little English, I knew a little Spanish, and with pointing and smiling, we kind of got to where we needed to go and what did they need and that sort of thing. And I think all of us experienced that kind of joy, that kind of gratitude, to be with those people and help those people. So I did that for several years. And then I broke my arm, and I still went and did detention stuff, and that was fine. And then 6 months after that, I broke my other arm.
Oh,
and
it
was much worse break than it was. And then COVID had come, and now we were in tents outside because we couldn't have people inside. So we'd get, they set up this whole nice tents with heaters in them and light in them and just, so, you know, it was very comfortable for the people, even though they couldn't be in the RV, which we fundraised for and got a brand, I don't think it was brand new, but got a much better RV that had heat and light and all the amenities in it. And when that happened, I said, you know, I need to step back.
Mm-hmm.
COVID was scary to me, and I was just not comfortable with the COVID going around.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. You know, and, you know, I should also say that, you know, in terms of COVID, I mean, several times prior to even COVID, I mean, we would know that chickenpox went around the detention center, and, you know, there were several diseases that, because they were not doing any kind of real monitoring of people's health or isolating people when they were sick. I mean, you know, part of the problem with this whole system is that these are for private prisons. You know, somebody makes a lot of money putting this poor kid in a cell for 3 months, 6 months, however long they end up being in.
And so they don't want to spend any more money.
Oh, no.
They need to.
You know, their fiduciary responsibility is to their shareholders. So, and at one time, this has been several years back, at one time we got a hold of some paperwork that said that they were being paid by the federal government $110 a night per person in that detention center. And at that time, they had room for 1,500 people in there, and there were 1,500 people. I mean, it has since, I think there's a smaller group in there now, but at the time. So, you know, do the math. I mean,
they can't afford a vaccine.
They can't even afford a nurse or a doctor. But Deborah Cruz, the woman who is now our executive director, did a wonderful job of making liaison with the ICE people in there and the GEO people in there. Originally, we would go at 3 in the afternoon and stay till 7 because they let people out at 5 o'clock. Sometimes we'd be there at 3 o'clock, and at 3:30, somebody would come out, and they would go off with their relative or whatever means we helped them with. And then we would sit there till 7 o'clock, and they would know that nobody else was coming out. But nobody told us.
Frustrating.
And now, as I understand it now, it's got a really nice give and take to it in that they will call us and say there will not be any more releases to me. So we know at 5:30 we can start closing up. We don't need to sit around and eat. Although there are nights, I must say, that, you know, at 6:30 they let out 10 people, and then you're there till 8:30 trying to help all these people get where they want to go. Yeah, but at least they tell us. And there for a while, when they were releasing 20 and 25 a night, they were doing a very good job of contacting Deborah and saying, tomorrow we're going to have 25. And then Deborah would have to get on the phone and say, could you come in too? Because I need more than just 3 people here. I mean, so it's an evolving situation. The sad part of it is really doesn't evolve for the detainees. You know, they still get picked up. They still get put in there. They still have to stay there till whatever. People would sometimes ask us questions about, when I had my passport, it didn't, and we would say, you know, I'm sorry, we're not really nice. We really don't know. But my basic take on it was, it's kind of one of those, if it's Tuesday with an R in the month, then you have to stay. I mean, you know, it just seemed to be those kind of bizarre situations. And what those people would go through. We already heard a lot of their stories about walking, you know, taking a plane into South America and then walking up to Mexico. And when you walk up to Mexico like that, you walk through like 8 or 9 days of a terrible, terrible campus thing and jungle in Panama. And if you survive that, not to mention, you know, you get to Mexico and sick people beat you up and take your watch because, or you get to Guatemala and somebody goes, oh, we're putting you in prison. When you get $300, let us know what you're out. And people were going through those I mean, sometimes getting to the detention center was the least of the problems, sure, you know, because of everything that we've been through to get there.
So these people are really motivated.
Oh,
so come here and start anew.
Yes. You know, that is absolutely the bottom line I saw every single time I was there was, now my wife and my kids are back there. Hopefully I'll be able to get a job soon and then I can bring them here. Or my grandma is there and I'm very worried because the whole village is going to get run over by, you know, some kind of gang or military or whatever political situations. And then of course there are also, you know, the people who are other, you know, they're gay, they're lesbian, they're transgender, they're, and in many countries around the world, none of that is okay with anybody. And so we would get people who would come out.
They were facing no persecution.
Oh, death. In many countries, the penalty for any of that stuff is death. Yeah. In some countries, they'll cut your hands off if you're homosexual. So, yes, it's...
Well, it seems then you need somebody else to help you with your hands.
But yes, so, and then of course now toward the end, it's becoming this whole environmental movement where, you know, the people in Guatemala can no longer farm because there's such a drought there. It doesn't, there's nothing to farm. There's no water, there's no, and so they're starving. There's a lot of things that force a person, and all of the people I have talked to, there's not a one of them who wouldn't want to stay where they came from in their hometown with their family, with their friends, if somebody wasn't going to kill them, or if they weren't going to starve to death, or, you know, whatever the terrible situation was that brought them.
So, what changes have you seen since it became Aid Northwest? Has there been a real difference than when it was?
Well, as I said, when we first started, we were fine by the seat of our pants, and we were like, and we'd look at each other and go, well, I guess we can give them $10 to get a hamburger. I don't know. I mean, we just, and now there's the procedures and there's a whole situation and there's whole things for, you know, if you take money from somebody, there's this thing you fill out. And, I mean, there's a lot of procedures now and how you do things and if you need help, this is who you call and that sort of thing. Mostly it's just growth, which is, of course, a great thing, because the more people know about this and can help us, the more people and the more often we can. We started out with at the detention center for the welcome center, we call it, and then we added the speakers bureau, and now there's a wonderful woman. She does the inside visitation, and she coordinated that whole thing.
Is that Catherine?
That's Catherine. Thank you.
Catherine Nile.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Catherine Nile coordinates all of that. And then, of course, when COVID came and nobody could go in, then she coordinated pen pals.
Oh, nice.
And so people got little letters back and forth, and some people got a special pen pal. And ever so often, she would put out a note that would say, you know, this guy's birthday is Saturday. He has no one. He's 8,000 miles from home. Could you send a birthday card? And the guy would get, you know, 10 birthday cards.
Oh, nice.
So there was that part of it, too. And of course, now there's a whole fundraising committee, and you know, you have to have that kind of stuff. You can't just hope that somebody's going to give you some money so you can buy a kid a hamburger. So, yes, it's changed and grown, and yeah.
And speaking of letters, I mean, you started a newsletter for Aid Northwest, right?
Yes, we decided we had to do a newsletter, and I said, well, I'll take a shot at it, and of course, and I did it since just a couple months ago. They've changed to a new format now, and it was just over my head, and too much to do, and there are people who know how to do that kind of formatting, so it works out much better if they're doing that. So, and we would put stories of people in the newsletter.
Yeah, that is so powerful.
Yeah, and so now they have fundraisers, and they're part of the Tuesday Giving, which comes up, and it's matched by some people. And we've had a couple of people come up and offer to match up to $5,000, so we've raised money that way. And it it really has grown in many, many ways. And who would have ever thought we'd be on the radio talking about this?
That's another huge.
That's a whole new dimension.
Yes. And of course, they have a Facebook page and, you know, that sort of thing too. But
you can register now for our next community meeting. Email us at officevolunteer@aidnorthwest.org. Again, that is officevolunteer@aidnorthwest.org. Aid Northwest is financed 100% through donations from individuals and private organizations. Aid Northwest relies on the over 200 volunteers, a small paid staff, and is only possible because of the many generous donors. Please visit our website for donation information. Financial donations, as well as donations of food, clothing, and backpacks, are gratefully accepted. There are many volunteer opportunities, from assisting at the Welcome Center, supporting immigrants while in detention, to serving on a committee. You can learn more at the website aidnorthwest.org. That is aidnw.org. You can email us at officeassistant@aidnorthwest.org. Aid Northwest, supporting immigrants with dignity while in detention and upon release. Thank you.